IASA.
Good afternoon. My name is Koichiro Kuramochi.
That's right. This is your first time.
Yes, this is my first meeting.
and you will have another issue, won't you?
Right.
Okay, you have to be nice to him for this one, but not the next one.
Go ahead. Thank you very much. So the agenda paper 14 is about distinction between a change in accounting policy and a change in accounting estimate. Submitter states that enforcers have identified divergence in practice regarding the distinction between a change in accounting policy and a change in accounting estimate. And the submitter presented specific 5 questions, and basically we decided not to address specific issues and present high-level analysis on the overall issue. And in the staff analysis, we stated that in the current existing standards, there are certain level of guidance. For example, definition of estimate is clear, and also it is very clear that changing measurement basis is a changing accounting policy. And also, paragraph 35 of IAS 8 says that if it is difficult, it will be treated as a changing estimate. On the other hand, we recognize that there are certain challenges. For example, definition of accounting policy and accounting estimate is kind of overlapping because definition of accounting policy is very broad. And also, it is not that clear what constitutes a change in measurement basis. However, these are not narrow in scope, and basically I'm suggesting we should communicate the issue to IASB because IASB is working on conceptual framework project as well as disclosure initiative. And the submitter also pointed out that criteria for change is different between changing accounting policy and changing accounting estimate. And also, disclosure requirement is different for these two changes. We think this is also an important point. However, again, this is not narrow in scope, and we think we should communicate this issue to disclosure initiative in IASB. So I'd like to emphasize that we think the issue is very important. At the same time, the issue is not narrow in scope, and we try to communicate the issue to IASB. Thank you very much.
Comments and reactions? Don't everybody jump at once. Marie?
Yeah, the paper from ISMA, I think I need to react. I agree with you that it's large in scope, and I fully agree with the conclusion that it should be addressed by the board, but we really appreciate it if it can be look at the board before the disclosure framework, maybe because disclosure framework, I think it's a very long project, and so if it can be done with the EIS-1 and EIS-8 amendment, it should be great. Possible.
Yeah, since we've got you on the mic, one of the things that I had trouble envisioning is what that kind of an amendment would look like. I think back to the difficulties that this committee has had, where situations in which it was, I thought, clear that something was a change in policy, and everybody said, oh, no, that's a change in estimate. What kind of an amendment you have in mind? You know, would we, on one hand, we could say these are changes in policy and nothing else is, and that's going to be kind of a hard list to put together.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, and that's why I agree that it should be dealt with at the board level. And my only concern is that if it can be done not in too much time because it's a major issue, it will be great. I have no... I do agree that the definition do overlap, as you said, but you can't tell more.
Okay. So you feel our pain. Scott.
I didn't want to take this on because I wasn't sure what to do. I'm not sure the board will know, but I guess maybe a question for Marie. Is the problem that things are being called changes in estimates that you believe perhaps should be changes in policy, and therefore there are disclosures that would have been made that aren't? Or is it that things are being called changes in estimates and therefore changes are being made that wouldn't pass the preferability test if it was a change in policy? Is it both of those or one over the other?
I think it's both, yeah.
On the second one, I would say you can't change an estimate to a worse estimate anyways. I mean, I know we have, the literature only says you need preferability for a change in policy. It doesn't say your new estimate has to be better than your old estimate if you're going to make a change in estimate, but is that not obvious?
We make it so in the agenda decision.
Mike? Yeah. I think where the difficulty perhaps comes is where you're changing from one method of estimation to another method of estimation. So you're still applying the same, what you could argue is the same policy to the same measurement objective. And so should there be disclosure associated with the change in methodology? And could it be argued that one methodology is better than the other, more preferable than the other, and therefore justifies the change?
The disclosure issue, I think that's a real issue, because there are much less disclosures for changes in estimates than changes in policy. And so that concern, absolutely, I understand. But on the issue, you're changing from one method of estimation to another, and let's say it's fair value. I mean, that's the easiest one to think of, right? You used to use the income method, and now you're going to switch to the market method because a market has developed or whatever. But you can't make that change, I don't think, unless you actually believe it improves your fair value estimation, right?
Well, but couldn't you have...
Or at least keeps it the same but is easier.
But couldn't you have a situation in which, you had a particular depth of field, and now it just exist anymore.
Sure.
So you can't. You're changing to an estimate that axiomatically is not as good as the one you had before, but.
Well, but it can't be. Right, but that's because the circumstances have changed, so if you stuck with your old method, your estimate would be worse than the estimate you're going to get on the new method. I mean, I'm worried about what I took out of here as a potential implication that some were saying I can make a change in estimate without believing that I'm changing to a better estimate.
Point taken.
Which I don't think is correct.
Laurent?
I was wondering what was the issue that we were really trying to address here. Because I have not been so much aware of diversity in the assessments, whether it's a change in accounting policy or change in estimates, and particularly looking at the outreach that you did, or the topics you have selected. The only one I could effectively consider there might be diversity is on the whether you use a FIFO method what's the name in English? I can't even say the FIFO or the other one. Weighted average cost for inventory. Is the issue really capturing whether there are sufficient disclosures? If the effect would be material when you have a change in the methodology or valuation techniques you use to measure something? Or was the concern that in one case, change in estimates, you go prospective, whereas if you have a change in accounting policy, it is retrospective? So I was not sure to really understand the concern ESMA really was after, because I mean, I have not seen so much diversity in classifying whether it's a change in accounting estimates or a change in accounting policies in practice.
Andrew?
I'd agree with Laurent in that we don't see a whole lot of diversity. That's because what is portrayed as a voluntary change of accounting policy is relatively uncommon. But I would suggest that as the staff paper notes, the definition of accounting policy is rather broad. And there's literally, I think, an awful lot of what is currently treated as a change in estimates could be argued to be a change of accounting policy, but I don't think that reflects practice. In terms of, I agree, by the way, that this is above the IFRIC pay scale and is not something that we could address on a timely basis. In terms of the possible direction of future work by whomsoever takes that on, I just note that the definition has two main purposes. It determines whether we deal with a change retrospectively or prospectively, subject to practicability, and it also determines disclosure. Paragraph 122 of IES1, for example. I feel the current definition works pretty well in terms of securing disclosure, but it's probably literally too broad in terms of when retrospective restatement is appropriate. So perhaps we need to, as a possible source of future work or direction of future work, identify what subset of that definition actually should be subject to retrospective restatement rather than prospective.
John Wu, board member privilege.
Yes, just one clarification on. Sorry, may I? Okay, the question to maybe the enforcer as well. Specific question is, what do you have some experience with this kind of issue? You know, specific. You provide a very good analysis of some issues in the appendix, so quite impressive. But I cannot feel, as some comments already made, what specific real problems when you enforce this kind of standarding. So maybe that will help us to focus on more specific solutions here.
I think our issue is that when someone just said it's, for example, a change in estimate, it's really difficult just to say, okay, it's a change in accounting policy. And because the accounting treatment is different, and we have the impression that in ES1, you need to fill in more criteria to have a change in accounting policy than a change in estimate. That so it's difficult to enforce, and if someone wants to go for the estimates, it's difficult to say it's a policy. I think that's our issue. And the discussion on the IFRS EC on the discount rate, I think, was a good example where we did not know exactly if it was an accounting estimate or an accounting policy or an estimate.
So that's the example C, listed here. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good, interesting question, but example. But I don't know, I'd like to keep discussing about based on the explanation.
Pardon?
Yeah, probably from a preparer's perspective, I mean, it's a very painful work to end up with a change in accounting policy because of this retrospective, correction. Whereas one likes it much more to end up with a change in estimates. While I believe that in most cases one might end up with a change in estimate, specifically with regard to the question when you have the same portfolio of bonds, say you stay with a 5A approach, however you choose, you change a little bit the methodology to calculate your interest yield statistically due to the fact that you have another actuary or so, but you stay at the 5A approach, then according to my mind this would be just an example as a change in estimate, whereas if you have to fall back to government bonds, it might be a change in accounting policy, just as an example. So I do not believe that companies fear that they have to provide additional disclosures with regard to change in estimate. So probably they are willing to give these kinds of disclosures to increase comparability. They really fear retrospective account with regard to changing accounting policy.
John?
Well, just maybe to echo what the others have expressed already, there's the clear change of accounting policy situation, which is one extreme, and then the zillions of estimates that is required to assess changing circumstances. That's also very clear. The in-between situation, I think, all relates to what I call change in method of application of accounting policy. So that's the gray zone. I understand that under IFRS, this is defined as a change of estimate. I don't think it's a change of estimate. I think it's a change of method of application of an accounting policy. But it's accounted for as a change of estimate. And I guess the disclosure that goes with it is similar to a change of estimate. Maybe that's the problem. And maybe I think you may be concerned, the regulators may be concerned that companies will play with that within that range to achieve some result that they would not be able to do if that they had to demonstrate that it's for a better method. So depending on what the really we're trying to achieve, one answer could be disclosure, one answer could be to impose on this zone, to define that zone and to impose on that zone a better method requirement. But in the end, I think I echo what the other one say. I'm not too sure what to do because I'm not too sure what the problem is. But we could, maybe not us, but maybe the board could define a third category. I think that's the problem. That third category is not clear for everybody.
Tony?
Yeah, I completely agree that this is something that the committee can't address because I think the definition of accounting policies in ISA is drawn so widely that it could encompass almost any method of estimation if that's what somebody wanted to do and describe it as a change in accounting policy. So I'm not sure that I commit that's not something that the committee can address. And I don't feel too strongly about whether something is altered retrospectively or altered prospectively as a change in estimate, so long as the change is to something that is better, for whatever reason, whether there is a better methodology or whether the methodology you previously used has ceased to be practical or ceased to be relevant, so long as it's better, and so long as the user can understand it. So if last year and this year are not comparable because my method of making this particular estimate has changed, then the users should be able to understand that. I'm not sure the board can actually do very much to address the definitions, but I wonder if it will be possible to clarify that the same thinking around a reliable and more relevant applies equally as Scott said, because I don't think that's explicit. And the board might be able to beef up the disclosures a bit, because disclosures of changes in accounting policies are always more fulsome than disclosures of changes in, for example, evaluation methodology. And I just wonder whether certainly the more relevant point might be drawn out in what we say in the agenda rejection, if we all think the same criteria should apply. So that will be my sense of it.
Got a note for that. Luca, did you want to come in at this point before I go the rest of the way?
No. I share the majority of the comments made during the discussion.
Joanna?
I'm going to actually have a slightly different view in that I actually think that notwithstanding what you say, Marie, and I understand, if you like, the dilemma potentially, but I actually think that IAS 8 actually provides adequate guidance to use judgment in terms of what is a change in accounting policy. And very specifically, if you like, if you actually say, well, what does IAS 8 want you to do? It actually says in paragraph 35, as you've got in your paper, that basically if it if it's hard to determine which it is, it's a change in accounting, in estimate. And therefore, it actually gives you what to do if it's hard to determine. Having said that, I also believe that paragraph 122 in IS 1, which talks about disclose how you've applied your accounting policies, is probably the key thing, and to my view is actually, for my part of the world in looking at accounts, is probably the paragraph that is least well used in terms of disclosure. So people talk about the estimates and the uncertainties, so go to 125 or whatever the paragraph is and follow that, but very little around 122. So what I'm wondering, and in some ways it comes to what Tony is actually saying, is that somehow in our agenda decision that we can highlight 122 and highlight that that would include change of method. It doesn't specifically say that in IS1, but I actually think that by bringing that in to the disclosures around 122 that we note that, blah, 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 I actually think we might go quite a long way, at least to getting the disclosures, A, if you like, implying that a change in method is actually a change in estimate, but also emphasising that disclosures around that are really important. So slightly different view than everyone else, and I'm not sure if it helps Marie, but that's where I see it.
Charlotte?
I agree with Joanna. I thought it was pretty clear that if you fall within the category of an estimate, you're in an estimate, even if you're in that sort of overlap area where you could be a policy or not, so you go to the estimate section. And then I think there were a lot of required disclosures about changes in estimate, or rather the nature of the estimates you use, especially, for example, in the fair value area for financial instruments, which give a lot of comfort. I would say I didn't really understand why the CVA point was in the paper, because I did think that was clearly a change of measurement basis and an estimate. I didn't even see that would have been even in the grey area, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I do understand. I think fair value is one of those areas where it's clear whether you're doing something because you think it's better, because you're trying to get to a result. I think it becomes harder when there's no principle behind the result you're trying to get to. Like, I don't know what the discount rate in IAS 19, I'm not sure what it's supposed to represent, so I'm not sure what the better policy is to do, because I'm not sure what I'm aiming at.
Sandy, and then Alan, and then Scott will wrap it up.
I was responding to something that Tony had said, that somehow, and maybe I misunderstood, that somehow if it's better, that users are indifferent with respect to whether it's a change in estimate or a change in accounting principle. And I don't necessarily think that's the case, because one goes to the income statement all at once, and it does affect a trend. And so to the degree to which you don't see a change in trend, and you can't sort of get an idea of how that's going to affect the future, I do think that it does matter, though I appreciate completely, having prepared financial statements, the challenge of going back and doing it retrospectively. I'm not really clear on what Joanne is saying, though, maybe it was because I was looking for the paragraph as you were talking about sort of leaning on paragraph 122. What I'm not exactly, can you clarify what you said? Maybe I just...
Paragraph, well, my view is, and certainly from my part of the world, as I say, paragraph 122 is not often used in terms of, or not properly used as far as I'm concerned, in terms of actually saying what are the judgments used around applying your accounting policies. And to me, some of those judgments are the methods that you use to apply your accounting policy. So, some of the things that we've talked about around the methods should be, if you change your method or a significant method, that you would actually use paragraph 122. That would be, to me, that is what is required by paragraph 122 of IS1.
Would that include, when you're saying they're changing from a qualitative description, the old qualitative description, to the new qualitative description, and a quantification of the impact of that, or simply a more detailed description once it's changed? That's what I wasn't clear.
Well, I guess it's what you think is the important thing to disclose for your readers. following that.
I just think that our experience is that many users think the discussion of judgments and estimates is very boilerplate.
Yes, and that's exactly what I'm saying. I make it less so.
Alan? Two things. One, I do worry that, Joanna, when you say, you know, it's a couple of times I've said it's kind of clear that if it's uncertain, then it's an estimate. And I just might pretend not to be very bright and say, I just don't know how to think myself through this. So you move towards the estimate, and that's what I worry that people are doing, because we had a look at that. So, but there are two things. I don't want to promise that we're going to do anything that quickly, because this is the issue of that replacement of IS8. However, there is one area where I think there may be some hope for a shorter rather than longer term fix. And I've got to be careful because I'm sitting next to Julie, but if looking at materiality, and it's actually going down to having that paragraph 122, for example. You know, you look at that, and at the moment what we get is 6 pages of accounting policy because people aren't quite sure which ones are the significant or important ones to pull out. And to me, I think one of the keys to unlocking materiality for us is not about defining thresholds or anything like that, but actually defining very clearly what makes a particular judgment, or clarifying what makes a policy. Now, a very simple example I often use is, I think a significant accounting policy, in my own view, and this is just my personal view, is one that generates a bigger difference between cash and accruals, because that's often what accounting does. If your policy doesn't move anything around, maybe it's not that significant. So I think that when we start to look at our materiality project in the short to medium term, we may start to come back and look at the clarity of the objectives of some of the disclosure requirements, and clarifying what we actually mean by judgment, or what we mean by significant accounting policy. Once you've clarified that, we don't have to talk about materiality thresholds, then I think a lot of those things in 122, paragraph 122 may become clearer, because all of a sudden you look at that and go, I don't have to disclose every policy, just the important ones, and it is important because. So that's work we're doing for Q1 next year, so there's at least starting to take to our board papers that start to look at those issues. The longer term is more of a case of, well, what happens when you do change an estimate or do change a policy? Is it better to do retrospective, prospective, and so on? Because this relates a lot to us when we produce a new standard. We go through this torturous debate sometimes about whether we should have a prospective accounting, or limited retrospective, or modified prospective. We use this language all the time. Basically, we should tell people what to do and why it's the best. Because when we actually had first-time adoption of IFRS, some people told us the best disclosure was actually not going back and restating everything, but actually explaining the movement from one to another. And those are more fundamental questions that I think we'll have a look at as part of the longer-term project. But we may get some clarification about the definitions a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I take the point that we should never base a decision on how stupid you are, because it's easy to pretend to be stupid. Thank God I didn't look, otherwise I would have had to done something, as Jim used to say. Late board member privilege.
I think this conversation has very well highlighted where is the tension point. As Martin said, preparers naturally prefer to qualify any change as a change in estimate. Easier to do, no restatement of comparatives, blah, blah. And as Sandra said, investors, users probably prefer to see a restatement as a change in accounting policy, so that you have a comparative on the current year and future years presented on the same basis. And as a result of that, I suspect that regulators or enforcers would prefer that in the uncertain, when the decision as to whether it is a change in estimate or a change in policy is uncertain, that the preference would be given to change in policies, which is the opposite of what the standard currently says. And maybe it's my bias as an ex-enforcer, but I think it's a natural position of the enforcers to give more weight to the needs of users than to the needs of preparers. So I agree totally that this is not something this committee can deal with. It's far too broad, beyond the limit of this committee. You could propose possibly an amendment to IS-8. When you say here, it's impossible, too broad to be addressed within the confines of existing IFRS, I'm not sure. We could reverse the focus in eyesight. We could change from the current preference to change in estimate to another solution, change in policies. We could do it, and I don't see why it is beyond the confines of existing IFRS. We can make changes to existing IFRS. I'm not sure it really deals with the framework, except that the framework highlights comparability as being one important qualitative characteristic. Change in accounting policy gives more comparability to the presentation than change in estimates. So it's not inconsistent with the objective of the framework. Whether this amendment to AS8 would fit in the current project on reducing disclosures or better disclosures, it can change the scope, but it's currently probably not within the current scope of this project.
I do recall that when what has since become Note 1 was first introduced, at least in my recollection, it was actually described as the disclosure of accounting policy choices. That was the initial move to get that in. So it was a disclosure about the stuff where you had a choice. So you didn't make a disclosure that these financial statements are prepared on an accrual basis because it wasn't a choice. And that is a lot of what now populates Note 1 is stuff where you wonder why they bothered. But John and Scott, and then I'm going to try and put a ribbon on it.
In my experience, this is an issue in practice, but I think, as Andy said, it's people default to the change in estimates because that's what's in IASA. But I think the definition of accounting policies in IASA is also very broad. So to me, there's a disconnect between the practice and default to change in estimates with the broad definition. The paper focuses a lot on valuation and what it talks about, evaluation technique, and what's in IFRS 13. But I think it's actually better to focus on cost techniques rather than valuation, because there's a clear measurement objective in IFRS 13 of fair value, and I can see an argument that the technique for determining fair value is always going to be just an integral part of the measurement of the estimate. If you think about cost attribution techniques, like what's the cost of inventory, is it first in, first out, or weighted average, or you think about significant or prolonged and thresholds, which are supposed to be objective evidence of impairment, those are techniques used in the application of an accounting policy, and it seems to me a strong argument could be made that those are actually meet the definition of accounting policies under ISA. I think the problem comes back to actually an information asymmetry between a change in accounting policy and a change in estimate. A change in policy gives you retrospective application, which means you get comparability, and you also get disclosure of the impact of the change. Most changes in techniques that are used to estimate are actually buried in the change in estimate itself. So it's impossible to determine what's being caused by the economic events and what's actually being caused by the change in the technique being used. So to me, there's a huge information asymmetry between the two, and therefore clarity between what's a change in policy and a change in estimate will be very welcome.
Last word, except mine.
First, to respond to Philippe, I think a lot of times when you can't tell whether it's a change in estimate or a change in policy, if it really does have a significant change in estimate component to it, you won't be able to do it retroactively, right? I changed my estimate estimate of warranty costs because I got access to a whole new database of information that didn't previously exist on how much it costs to do these various things. Why can't we apply that retrospectively? Because the information did not exist. Yes, I'm now estimating my warranty accrual differently. It's a completely different method. But I can't apply that retrospectively. And I think is the reason why we have this. If you're not sure what it is, do it as a change in estimates, because we're not sure you'll be able to go back. But the counterpoint on that is, if we wanted to help people think a little bit about what the line is between the change in accounting policy and the change in estimate, there's already guidance in IASA that says An estimate may need revision if changes occur in the circumstances on which the estimate is based as a result of new information or more experience. I mean, you know, that is kind of suggestive of the fact that, you can't do it retroactively because the new information didn't exist. You didn't have the experience. You can't say, what would my estimate have been 2 years ago if I had the experience then that I have now? I mean, it just, it's not really possible to apply that retrospectively. If we wanted to give something in an agenda decision that helps people think it through, I think that's the language. The other thing I wanted to point out is we've been debating the disclosure and pointing at paragraph 122 of IAS 1. I don't think we need to do that. Paragraph 39 of IAS 8 seems pretty useful. An entity shall disclose the nature and amount of a change in accounting estimate that has an effect in the current period or is expected to have an effect in future periods, except that the disclosure of the effect on future periods doesn't have to be made when it's impracticable. And if the amount of the effect on future periods is not disclosed because it's impracticable, then entity shall disclose that fact. And that's actually a pretty strong disclosure requirement. This says you have to tell us what effect your change in estimate is going to have on the future. We don't even have that for changing accounting policies. We just do it retrospectively, but it doesn't say tell us what's going to happen in the future. On estimates, you're supposed to try to tell us what's going to happen in the future. I don't think anybody ever does that because it's awfully hard. But there are some good disclosure requirements related to changes in estimates that I suspect we could lean on to try and push for disclosure. Combine that with the comment that we think you should only be changing estimates if you think you're changing to a better estimate. We take that as axiomatic, even if it's not stated in the standard. And you know, maybe we have something that'll help push practice in a helpful direction. Frankly, I'd like to do more because if ESMA is seeing this as a problem, then I mean I take it as a given that it is. Just having trouble figuring out what to do.
Yeah, I think.
What's got to be in the agenda decision?
That's what you said in the agenda. We can just call it the insane babbling.
We got a couple of things here, a couple of missions for the staff. Mission number one is what we put in the agenda decision after we say we're not going to do any. I think I heard two things that I probably belong in an agenda decision. One is the notion that all estimates are not created equal, and moving to a worse estimate is not permitted. We can certainly say that. You got to be making things better when you change. The other thing is to point people to the disclosure requirements. We can certainly put that in our agenda decision. The second mission that the staff will have as a consequence of this is going to the board. Since we all said that this belongs to the board, including at least one of the board members here. So I'm sure, Philippe, you will support the staff. there is Alan's suggestion that it fits with a discussion of materiality. I think Sandy would say every change in estimate is material to users because we want to know what you did. And so if it was big enough that you had to go through the exercise, we want to know.
Well, I would note that the disclosure requirement is IFA change in estimates could not say significant changes,
right,
or material changes.
Right.
It says you will disclose changes in estimates.
So I think the user would say, when in doubt, tell me about it.
Yeah, let me make a judgment.
Yeah, I mean, let me decide.
It doesn't happen, right?
So, I think we've got that covered. In terms of so I'm not sure that the materiality work is going to help us. One, we can certainly pursue it, though. Not sure it doesn't help us. The one thing that we could go to the board with is to say, and this I think was John's point, maybe there's a middle ground here.
maybe just saying it's one or the other isn't good enough. And maybe there's a third category. I think I wrote down, you called it the method of application of the policy, which is different than me saying, well, I think there are six of them. This method of an application of a policy is a level higher than that, I think is what you were implying. Am I correct in that? And you're nodding your head, yes. So that's at least the starting point for what we take to the board and report to the board about what we ought to do about this. Is that a fair summation? Okay. I think we can get this into update.
I think so.
So you'll see it when you see the draft of update. Okay? You sure work hard at deciding not to do anything, he said rhetorically. Okay. Next up is... Okay. Okay. We're an hour ahead of when we were going to take a break, but that might still make sense. Everybody want to take a quick one?
Sure.
Yeah.
Back at 1:45.